6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribe.
Welcome to A Public Affair. Today is Wednesday, November 7th, the day after Election Day, and we will be talking about the election results today on this hour. We'll be taking your calls. We want to hear from you about what you think happened yesterday. One of the most significant things to happen here in Wisconsin is that Tammy Baldwin, our own congresswoman here from the Madison area, will be the country's first openly gay senator after being elected with 51% of the votes cast yesterday. She will also be Wisconsin's first female senator. And we wanted to talk about that this hour. We'll be talking about local election results and hearing from you what's on your mind. So first, we want to bring you the victory speech that Tammy Baldwin gave at the Monona Terrace here in Madison last night.
Tonight we have won a huge victory for Wisconsin's middle class. And it's that battle for Wisconsin's middle class that has been what this has all been about since this journey began 14 months ago. Everywhere that I've gone in our beautiful state, people have told me that they want a senator who will listen to the middle class when they need help. A senator who will stand on the side of the middle class. A senator who will wake up every morning and fight for the middle class. They've told me that they want an economy in which everyone plays by the same rules and everyone does their fair share. They've told me that they want a level playing field, one where China can't cheat our workers and millionaires can't dodge taxes and Wall Street can't crash our economy with risky gambling. They've told me that they want to pay down our debt without shortchanging our future. They've told me that they want to be able to rely on the guarantees of Medicare and Social Security, not just today, but for future generations. Most of all, they've told me that the special interests have too much power in Washington, and it's time for the people's voice to be heard. People's voice was heard tonight, Wisconsin. And come, and come January, your voice will be heard in the United States Senate. Humbled and grateful, and I'm ready to get to work. Ready to stand with President Barack Obama. And ready to fight for Wisconsin's middle class. Now, I am well aware that I will have the honor to be Wisconsin's first woman U.S. Senator. And I am well aware that I will be the first openly gay member. But I didn't run to make history. I ran to make a difference. A difference in the lives of families struggling to find work and pay the bills. A difference in the lives of students worried about debt. And seniors worried about their retirement security. A difference in the lives of veterans who fought for us and need someone fighting for them and their families. A difference in the lives of entrepreneurs trying to build a business and working people trying to build some economic security. But in choosing me to tackle those challenges, the people of Wisconsin have made history. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for the trust that you've placed in me. And all I can do is work as hard as I can to keep that trust. Now, I know that many of the people listening to this speech tonight may not have voted for me, but I want you to know that I will stand up for you. And I ask you to work with me to move our state forward. Here is the promise I want to make you. I will be a senator for all of Wisconsin. Has had some incredible leaders from both political parties and all across the ideological spectrum. And I have a lot of good examples to follow. One is Herb Kohl. You know that when he first ran for the U.S. Senate, his slogan was "Nobody's senator but yours." But over the course of his service, that slogan became a title, one that he has earned every day that he has served the state of Wisconsin. I am so grateful to have had his support throughout this campaign and humbled to carry his deep commitment to public service. I also want to thank Tommy Thompson for his life in public service. Before I do, I'd like you to indulge me in an acknowledgement on a very personal level. First of all, I just got off the phone with him. He was very cordial and congratulated me and wished me well and wished all of us well. But I want to tell you a quick little story about Tommy Thompson on a very personal level. I still remember the first time I ever met Tommy. I was 30 years old and a freshman member of the Wisconsin Assembly. He was greeting new members of the legislature at the governor's mansion. We didn't talk politics. I explained to the governor that I was Joe Baldwin's daughter and that I had never met him before my father passed away. Tommy's face lit up. He had known my father in college, and he would delight in sharing some small remembrance every time I saw him. And that meant the world to me. Tommy and I didn't always agree. In fact, in this campaign, we didn't agree on much. But there can be no doubt that he shares my love and all of our love for Wisconsin. Tonight I want to reach out to his supporters and ask them to join me in standing up for our belief that we are all in this together. Now, make no mistake, I am a proud Wisconsin progressive. Which means I believe in holding the powerful accountable, I believe in fair play, and I believe that when people are struggling, you don't talk down to them, you help lift them up. And I believe in Wisconsin's workers and a work ethic that I will fight for every day. But I also believe that we can only move forward if we move forward together. Now, this has been an incredible journey, one that has shown me the best that our state has to offer. I've watched Wisconsin workers put the Made in America label on boots for our soldiers in Merrill, on ships made in Marinette, and engines made in Beloit. I've met with potato farmers in Plover. I've eaten walleye in Fond du Lac. And the best cream puffs in the world at the State Fair in West Allis. I am grateful to so many people tonight. I want to thank the people of the 2nd Congressional District for giving me the honor for for giving me the honor of serving you for the last 14 years. And I want to congratulate Mark Pocan, who will do a terrific job representing. It has been a privilege to serve in the House of Representatives, and I had a hardworking, dedicated team of congressional staff who do incredible work in my name, but on your behalf. So, led by my dear friend and Chief of Staff Bill Murat, I want to recognize these amazing people. I am grateful for all the elected officials and public servants who stood with me throughout this campaign. And in particular, I want to single out Gwen Moore, who famously reminds me whenever she sees me, I was for you before you were for you. And I also want to thank Russ Feingold for campaigning with me on my behalf for the last 14 months. I have never been a part of a campaign organization as amazing as this one. And I want to thank my friend and campaign manager, Karen Johansson, I want to thank her for helping me build this team of determined, inspirational, and incredible staff, supporters, volunteers. It's been incredible, and I'm grateful for the campaign. Now, you've all heard a lot about my grandparents who raised me, and especially my grandmother. She was born in 1906 before women had the right to vote and got to live to see her granddaughter elected to the House of Representatives. I know she would be proud tonight. I am happy and so fortunate to have with me tonight my mother, Pam. Now, among all the things I could tell you about her, she had the prophetic wisdom to name me Tammy. How could she have known that one day there'd be headlines reading Tammy versus Tommy? I also am joined this evening by my aunts and uncle, Sarah, Melinda, and Guy. And I just want to thank my family for their love, support, and encouragement. So tonight, a long journey comes to an end, but we know our work is just beginning. And whether you voted for me or not, whether tonight you're celebrating a victory or dealing with a defeat, I hope that when we wake up tomorrow morning, we are ready to work, ready to fight, ready to fight for our middle class, ready to keep our promises to our seniors, ready to have a level playing field for our workers, ready to make sure that everyone has a fair shot, ready ready to make our country stronger, more prosperous, and more equal. Ready to do what Wisconsinites have done for generations. Stand together and move forward. Thank you.
And that was Congresswoman and soon-to-be U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin speaking to the rather ecstatic crowd at the Monona Terrace last night in Madison. Now, we have also wanted to share with you a brief excerpt from Tommy Thompson's concession speech, which was seemingly less scripted, more raw, and where he was rather surprised by the outcome of the race. He gathered with his supporters in Waukesha last night.
I believe so much the fact that we are so fortunate to be Americans and to have the opportunity to have the liberty and the freedom, the opportunity to do whatever we want to do. That's pretty impressive. We have an opportunity to choose our leaders. We don't always agree. But I congratulate the president tonight, even though I did not support him, fought hard to defeat him. he's our president, and hopefully he will lead our country in a better direction. I thank our new senator. I called her and congratulated her. Wasn't my first choice. But she is our senator, and I wish her well. I congratulate her and hope that she is able to do a great job for the state of Wisconsin.
And that was a longtime popular Republican governor, Tommy Thompson, at his concession speech with supporters in Waukesha last night. Now, you're listening to A Public Affair. I'm your host today, Molly Stentz, and I want to turn the airwaves over to you now. I want to hear what you think about the outcome of the race, about the historic win by Tammy Baldwin, the continued pattern of Wisconsin voting Democratic on the biggest ticket, the top of the ticket race, the presidential race, as it has done every presidential election since 1988, but also why the Senate races went as they did here locally, here in the state Senate, why Republicans have taken control of the Senate and control of the Senate Assembly and GOP, why the difference there. Want to hear your take on these election results. And here with me in the studio, someone that has been following our elections and that was out reporting for WORT last night, I have Norm Stockwell with me.
Thanks very much. Very glad to be here. You know, it's interesting to me. I, like many other people, I think, thought that we would be waiting a long time to hear those results last night. As it turned out, there weren't nearly as many delays, long lines, irregularities, things like that around the country or here in Wisconsin than people had expected. Racine ran out of ballots and had to photocopy them. There were a couple of machines, particularly City of Waukesha, where the machines weren't tabulating properly, weren't counting the paper ballots properly, and those had to be recounted to get that final number, and those ran a little bit late into the night. But, you know, in general, things went tremendously smoothly, and we heard the news of the Obama taking the sufficient electoral votes by, what, 12 minutes after 10 or something like that, I think it was last night. And we heard the results in the U.S. Senate race not that much long after that. It was shortly after 11, I think, if I remember right, when we finally heard those numbers. But it was much quicker than people expected, and that was a surprise. With all the preparations that people were doing for making sure that the vote would be secure and well counted, I think that we actually saw some of that pay off.
And with a large turnout, with a turnout approaching 70%, so actually slightly higher than 2008 levels, although not a historic high, but more so than the last election. Pretty heavy voter turnout. And you were at the Monona Terrace, and you spoke with Tammy Baldwin and spoke with many of the supporters.
Yeah, I didn't actually get to speak directly with Tammy, I have to say, because the orchestration of that event was pretty tight. She waited, they waited to make sure that all the numbers were in. She came up on the stage, presented her speech, and congratulated her supporters, and then left pretty quickly. It was not a place to sit around and socialize at that point in the night. A lot of other folks were there throughout the evening. Mark Pocan, who announced very early on in the evening and had a very sizable majority, he stayed throughout and was in the hallways and talking with people and so on. A lot of other Madison activists and politicians were in that hall last night, and there was quite a celebratory mood from an early time. In fact, because Fox News was calling the state for Wisconsin before anybody else, pretty much before the New York Times, before MSNBC, there was quite a celebratory atmosphere when I arrived at Monona Terrace, and it was quite packed and stayed that way throughout the night as people waited for the concession of Governor Romney, which came about 11:30 or so.
Mm-hmm. And we are taking your calls today, your thoughts on the election, on the Senate race, on Mark Pocan's win. Not a surprise there, but following in the footsteps, perhaps, of Tammy Baldwin to become our next congressman from Madison. So we are going to go to the phone lines and bring people into the conversation. So we'll go to our first caller. And caller, what's your first name and your comment?
Hello?
Hi, that's you. Welcome.
Oh, yeah. This is John. Well, I'm ecstatic about the results. I heard about it I woke up about 12:30 this morning and turned on the radio. When I went to bed, I didn't know who was going to win. And thank God Barack Obama beat Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney would have been a disaster, and this country's still not in very good shape. This recession is going to take a long time to dig out of, and I don't envy Barack Obama up against that obstructionist Republican legislature. They're going to pull the same crap they did the last 4 years. So my hat's off to him, and I hope he succeeds, because this country is not in good shape. And as far as Tammy goes, at last, like Russ Feingold, we've got a real progressive in the Senate. And hats off to her, too. I'm glad for the victory. I could care less about people's sexual orientation, but I'm sure for that particular group of people, this is a real triumph, too. So I'm very happy, but the future is something that's really going to have to be dealt with. There's horrible problems that this country's facing, and I hope both of these two will do so much more than the Republican contenders that I'm just happy today. That's all.
All right. Thanks for that call, John.
It's interesting. I mean, the caller points out the contentious nature and what the reelected President Obama is going to have to face. And, of course, one scenario that a lot of people were predicting was that he would win the Electoral College but not the popular vote. And that, I think, would have really, sort of brought up the legitimacy issues in a way that we haven't seen before. And even though we've certainly had cases where a president has won the Electoral College and not the popular vote, like George Bush in 2000, I think that it really would have made it even more difficult for President Obama if he had not won both the popular vote and the Electoral College.
Sure. And I think we do have another caller waiting on the line to join us on the program. The phone number is 256-2001-866-899-WORT. We'll go to the phone lines and take our next caller. Hi, welcome to A Public Affair. What's your first name and comment?
My name is Thomas. And my comment is, are there actually two different Democratic parties and maybe even two different Republican parties, where you have the national party that is only concerned about the national elections, and then you have the state parties that are concerned only about the state elections, though there seem to be more crossover with the GOP this time because they got out the vote on the Walker recall as well as on this election. And so are we basically losing what we could call democracy in the state because everything is shuffled off to Washington and everybody seems to think that that's where all the work gets done and that's where all the representation gets done. And I'll hang up and listen to your answers. And thank you for the program.
All right. Thanks, Thomas. You're certainly speaking to the divide between the state Democratic challengers who you saw not actively campaigning with the higher profile races, Tammy Baldwin, President Obama, campaigning together, speaking on stage together, as well as Mark Pocan, but not sharing the stage with some of the other congressional Democrats running to try to take back other congressional seats.
Or the state offices as well. You know, I spoke to several people last night at Monona Terrace who were exactly, as the caller has been, complaining about the fact that so much focus was placed and so much money was spent on the national races and that the state races really suffered as a result. And one organizer who'd been working up in the northern part of the state was telling me that in a lot of these assembly races in the last few days before the election, they saw an influx of like $250,000 per race of cash being spent on advertising in these, you know, for these small assembly seats that make a lot of difference to people in a local community, but don't make that headline, don't make that national radar, if you will, of attention. And the parties similarly didn't devote the resources to those campaigns that they perhaps could have in the lead up to the election, in the months before the election.
Absolutely. Would love to hear some more thoughts on that issue. That's one of the things that's been on my mind, too. We've got several more folks waiting to join the program, so we will go back to the phone lines, 256-2001, anywhere here in the Madison area, 866-899-WORT. We'll go back to the phones and take our next caller. And welcome to A Public Affair. Please share your first name and your comment.
Is that me?
It is.
Yeah, this is Amos, and I was happy to see that Tammy won. But I've been listening to this lesser of two evils theory for 28 years, and it is mind-boggling to me. And it's interesting if you look at like Common Dreams website or Alternet, and you see the editors pushing article after article saying it's you have to get out there and vote for somebody who says he has the right of the presidency to have a kill list and to kill any American citizen that they want to for whatever reason without any kind of evidence at all or lock you away for life. And to see people that say they're progressive and that they support the rule of law going out celebrating that Obama has gotten another 4 years, to me, is just mind-boggling. And as one commentator, I've been reading carefully the responses to all these articles over the last few months from those websites. And as one person said, you know, I'd rather live under a 1%, a fascist 1%er like Romney than have voted for a fascist 1%er like Obama. And the other thing I want to say is I actually published an article on Counterpunch on the 29th of October. It's called Obama in 2012, American Death Squads in 2016. And my theory, and I think it's going to show turn out to be right, is that it's exactly as the title implies, that by going with this person who has established this kind of unconstitutional murder of American citizens, let's see what happens in 2016 when the economy goes down the tubes and the mainstream media has control over what messages people hear. And we'll see who gets elected in 2016, and we'll see what kind of rule of law we have them do to Obama's kill list. And before you disagree with that, read the article and then get back to me, because I just think it's appalling. People are out celebrating somebody who has those principles of killing people at will. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. I think a really interesting issue. We have not heard a lot about the issue of drone strikes and the kill list. You know, it came up in these little tiny fits and starts, mainly from independent journalists, and also there was one local TV reporter in Ohio from actually a Fox News affiliate that brought it up, got a few moments with the president, and managed to ask about the kill list. Didn't get much of a response. There was an independent journalist that also asked the chair of the Democratic Party nationally to comment on the kill list. She, you know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she did not have much of a response. She denied actually that it existed at all. And I think that raises also the interesting point of the third parties. We had a lot of them running. We had one right here, the campaign being run out of Madison, the Jill Stein campaign. Did anyone out there, how many people voted for third parties, even in a swing state? We heard a lot of news, a lot of commentary, people suggesting a safe state strategy as they've done before, where people in states that quote unquote didn't matter, states that were safe, could vote their conscience, could vote for the candidate they thought best. But then in the swing states had to vote for one of the two major parties. So how many people here in Wisconsin bucked that trend? I'd love to hear from you. 256-2001.
Yeah, you know, one thing. I encourage people to check out the last 5 or 10 minutes of this morning's 8 o'clock buzz, where Jen Miyasaki was speaking with UW professor Al McCoy, because he did address this drone issue in a pretty interesting way, and talking about the space drones as well, the satellite drones. And I think that that's something that we'll be hearing more about in the coming years. I do want to go back to one thing the caller said when he was talking about both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney as being one percenters. And I really think that there's an important distinction to be made. I kind of see it more as like there's the one percenters and the 10 percenters. And Obama is, to my mind, in the 10 percenters. And the one major factor in that is, if he were driving by himself in an old car on the south side of Chicago, would he get stopped? And I think that, you know, we haven't really heard a lot about race in this campaign, and yet race was a huge, huge factor around the country. There was one person who posted on the internet a videotape of a Mitt Romney button that said, you know, vote Romney, it's the white thing to do. And people argued that that was maybe photoshopped, but the person who made the video clip of it said that it was not. And so I just think that, you know, the issue of race in this campaign, it reminded me very much of the Harold Washington election in Chicago. Harold Washington against Bernard Epton in the 1980s, where there was buttons for Epton that were just white, no words on them. It was just a white circle. And that kind of thing still has a major effect in U.S. politics, you know, even though we're by some descriptions in a, quote, post-racial society.
Yeah. So we're going to go back to the phones. We've got folks waiting to join us. What do you think about how large a factor was it? Was it a factor for you? Was it a factor for you voting for Obama, the fact that he has been dealt and continues to deal with racism in this country, with backlash from the Congress, with everything else? Was that a factor in your vote? Let us know. We're going to go back to the phone lines and see what else is out there and what else people people have to say about these election races. So we're going to go back to the phones and take the next caller. Hello, welcome to A Public Affair. What's your first name and comment?
My name is Rockamine.
Hi, Rockamine.
Thank you. I think this has been a very interesting time in the history of the planet, actually. We have lived to see America not be dominated by the so-called minority, the white minority in this country. And as usual, it's going to be people, you know, Americans really need to understand currently we are the greatest mass murderers of all time. And we need to change this mentality where we solve all our conflicts, resolutions with violence, and to take the opportunity that we have been given to change ourselves as a collective, not individually, because individually we'll never make it, and to actually forgive ourselves and get on with our lives. If we continue to be dogmatic and live in a Machiavellian mentality, is the definition that Einstein gave of stupidity. We'll keep on repeating the same thing and get the same results. So we had this opportunity to advance ourselves as opposed to continuing to be petty and talk about you don't live with yesterday, nor do you live with tomorrow. Let me inform you, you have now, and you don't get rollover minutes. We have an opportunity to change this whole universe, not just the planet, but this whole universe, if we decide as a collective to stop just being so damn petty.
All right.
All because
thanks, Rockamine.
You don't like me, you don't care for a certain entity, that is so so outdated.
So
we all live on this planet, and we need this planet. I think the recent weather has shown us that we are all one when it comes to natural disasters. It doesn't discriminate.
So how do you see that fitting into the election results and the election races? Were you surprised by the results? Do you think they're going to change the course? I mean, our national policy on climate change, as you bring up?
No. Whoever your president really doesn't make a difference. It's the American people. That's why the government is owned by the people. The people run America, not your elective officials. Your elective officials should just be puppets for the people. The people must rise up and start taking care of their own business. No one is going to take care of you but yourself. You need to take care of yourself and start depending on this politician to do this or that politician to do that. America is so steeply deep in white supremacy and along with its tool of racism, it could care less about that person who was elected.
Okay, Rockamine, thanks. We're going to go back to the phones. We've got a number of people waiting to get on the air. We want to hear from as many people as possible this hour, so we will do our best to take all your calls and get you on the air. 256-2001, anywhere you can hear us in Madison, or 866-899-WORT. And we'll go back to the phones and take our next caller. Hello, welcome to A Public Affair. What's your first name and question?
Hi, my name is Pete, and thank you for the opportunity. I wanted to respond on the voting thing and put a couple of very quick requests out there. I did vote for Jill Stein for the Greens. I voted for Obama in 2008 for the first time voting for a Democrat for president in 16 years. And by the time it came around, even though I freely acknowledge that Obama did some really good things over the last 4 years, a combination of the drone strikes and other things that previous callers have brought up, plus Stein's focus on things like the Green New Deal for green jobs, ending the wars, et cetera, the things that the Green Party stood for a long time, really kind of convinced me that was the only way to go. And it was challenging, and this sort of leads to my request. Is there a way, even if Democrats feel really strongly about their candidate, that we could stop the "you're going to spoil the election if you vote third party" business. Can we just have a dialogue about the issues and thereby create a fusion that way instead of doing the oppositional stuff? And I'm curious what you all think about that.
I think that would be great. I think to have candidates and to have the debates and the conversation revolve around issues would be amazing. I don't see that's what we have happen currently. Unfortunately, I did see some progress, though, that I think was led by Amy Goodman of Democracy Now, with her efforts to expand the debates nationally, has a very sizable audience.
And then followed by Larry King, right, in Chicago, with the debate there.
That's what I was about to say. So she, building her, her national audience, being on hundreds and hundreds of stations across the country and even around the world and on the internet, pioneered that idea of expanding the debate, as she has been doing for years. But then to see that picked up, to see that the Washington Post paying more attention to third-party candidates, to see Larry King holding debates, to see even Tea Party folks holding debates with third-party candidates, it felt that there was definitely more an elevated profile of third-party races. Now, whether that's going to break through and change our electoral laws is another matter, but it certainly saw more attention this time around. We're going to go back to the phone lines and get some more callers, get some more perspectives, take our next call. Welcome to A Public Affair. What's your first name and question or comment?
I'm Bill.
Hi.
And I think one of the most significant aspects of the election yesterday was the rejection in four states across the country of discrimination against same-sex couples who want to get married.
Absolutely.
So I just thought I would throw that in.
Absolutely.
Maybe more significant than a re-election of the president.
And interesting that Wisconsin, a state that brings the country their first openly gay senator, has a constitutional ban on gay marriage, unlike many states across the country.
Yeah, also the first legislation protecting gay and lesbian people in the workplace. Right.
Yeah.
That also came out of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I
absolutely
think that discrimination is coming to an end.
Hopefully. Hopefully so.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go. Thanks for the call. We're going to go back to the lines and take our next caller. Welcome to A Public Affair. What's your first name, and what was significant to you about the election?
Hi, my name is John.
Hi.
Being a Caucasian male and having an African-American son, it's just really empowering being able to tell him and believe it that he can be whatever he wants to be, because we do have a black president. It's very empowering. And great to be able to have him look up to an additional African-American role model.
And how does that play out for you? Do you feel that you have critiques of the president's performance that are overshadowed?
Sorry, what do you mean?
So do you feel that how the historic nature of his presidency, the fact that he was our first African-American president, is that the most important thing about his candidacy?
Oh, not at all. My 10-year-old son and I, when we were to have discussions about him, it even came up. I voted for him because of who he was, not because of his color or anything. I think he's a great president. He got us, getting us out of the wars, getting us moving ahead as far as the economy. It doesn't matter what color he is, but I think it's great that it's a positive role model for my son.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for the call. We're going to try to keep sneaking in a few more calls. We're wrapping up the end of the hour here on A Public Affair, talking about elections the day after. So we're going to go back to the phone lines and grab another call. Welcome to A Public Affair. What's your first name and your comment?
David.
Hi, David.
Hi. I agree. I think it's been a fascinating discussion. Some of the concerns about militarism and racism that have already been expressed. And I agree it was an exciting night in terms of same-sex marriage relationships being validated. I think that was added to the glow. I think it was an interesting night in terms of some of the legislation about marijuana.
Yes.
And I did vote for Obama, and I work in healthcare. And I think it's just, I think it's an exciting thing that, I know the Health Care Reform Act isn't perfect in the minds of many, but at least now we have 4 years where we know it can at least be implemented, as bumpy as a ride as that might be. And I think that did receive some reaffirmation nationally in terms of the vote. I guess the one thing that I have concerns about locally is you guys touched upon it, what happened in the state Senate here in Wisconsin. And kind of in a more specific comment, just what's going on with Scott Walker's administration and Dennis Smith, the Secretary of Health, who is rumored soon to resign, and the fact that Walker has put off until the last minute. I think he has until November 17th to offer some sort of implementation, which at this point he has not done. And just you know, watching that unfold here locally, I think is going to be interesting as well.
I agree. I agree on the state level. It's going to be an interesting year for legislation. Probably we will see another year of record numbers of bills being introduced here in the state legislature, given that there's one-party control across the Senate, Assembly, and governor race. The interesting, you brought up the marijuana initiative. So I was thinking about that last night, given how popular the Dane County referendum was, and thinking that Ben Mazel would have loved to have seen this moment had he lived to see in Colorado legalization in marijuana. But interestingly, not as wasn't as common a ballot initiative elsewhere in the country. Wondering if that's on the horizon for Wisconsin.
These things get a start, and there at least was a start.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call.
You know, in the couple minutes that we have left, one thing we didn't really talk about today, and it wasn't really talked about at all in the debates and barely in the campaigns, was the issue of climate change. And I think that,
although it was in the Wisconsin Senate, it certainly came up in our Senate race,
yes,
between Baldwin and Thompson.
That is true. I was thinking of the presidential race,
yep.
But yeah. But I was going to note that, you know, here in Wisconsin, I think we're going to see, and I spoke with Spencer Black last night a little bit at Monona Terrace about
former assemblyman.
About the sort of dangerous moment that we're moving into in terms of what's going to happen to the environment here in the state of Wisconsin with the now control of the Senate and the Assembly and the governorship. Tom Goldtooth, who's the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network, is in town in Madison today and tomorrow, and it's kind of a unique experience. And so I wanted to make sure we got a mention out of it. He's doing a workshop today on challenges for change, working for climate justice. That's going to be happening at Union South this afternoon, this evening. And then also he's doing a public talk tomorrow at the Pyle Center called Walking with Mother Earth and Father Sky, A Message from the Heart. And that's, again, Tom Goldtooth. You can search that on the Internet, but definitely something that I think that people might want to check out on this issue of climate change, which did not get nearly the coverage that it needed to during this presidential campaign, in spite of the fact that it was sort of thrown in our face with what they're now calling Superstorm Sandy.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Tom Goldtooth of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Well, we have hit the end of the hour here on A Public Affair. Thanks for all of the callers. Thank you, Norm, for joining me here in the studio today. So thank you very much.